This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, May 27, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from a hotel in Cleveland where I was visiting my daughter, who's in college out here. And I just want to say my thanks to Jesse Rogers yesterday for filling in. Did a great job. News from Major League Baseball yesterday. Mickey Callaway, the former manager of the Mets, was banned until at least the end of the 2022 season. And after Major League Baseball announced that, he was fired as the Angels pitching coach. He'd been on leave up until that decision yesterday. The Angels issued a follow-up statement announcing that firing, saying, "We appreciate Major League Baseball's diligent investigation and support their decision." So the question, I think, is whether or not anyone, given the shift in the sport, the larger shift, of whether or not Mickey Callaway will get a job in Major League Baseball. It's the same question that we have about Jared Porter, who was briefly at the head of the front office of the New York Mets early this year. A really sticky situation with the St. Louis Cardinals yesterday. Umpire Joe West, just one day after he broke the record for most games umpired, ordered Giovanni Gallegos of the Cardinals to switch caps because apparently there was sunscreen on the bill. Cardinals manager Mike Schilt, thinking his player was unfairly singled out, got ejected during an animated argument. Cardinals won yesterday 4-0, but of course the conversation after the game was about what happened. Here's the moment that Joe West went to the mound and Gallegos' hat was confiscated.
Joe West was looking at something maybe on the glove of Gallegos. Mike Schilt's coming back, and maybe it's the bill of his cap, and he throws out Schilt.
Schilt's leaving. Joe West broke the record yesterday for most games umpired. Now he's adding to his ejection total. Schilt is irate.
And I think maybe he's telling him to change gloves or change hats.
Gallegos getting a different hat.
Yeah, it's the hat. It's the... could very well be something on the bill of the cap. Who knows?
And we'll find out, I think, as the day goes along, whether or not Gallegos is going to be subject to suspension. I called around this morning to find out if the hat was confiscated, and I have not gotten back hard information on that point. That sound, by the way, Jason Benetti, Steve Stone on NBC Sports Chicago. As the game moved along, top of the eighth inning, one of the Cardinals continued to have a great day.
Swing and a hard hit to left. That ball is deep. Tommy Edmond has hit his second home run of the game, a long one. And the Cardinals lead 2-0. Home run number 4 for Tommy Edmond, and he got all of that one. And he has supplied all the offense today.
Now, after the game, after the Cardinals win, the conversation was a lot about what happened with Giovanni Gallegos and about Joe West. Here's Mike Schilt basically scoffing at Joe West, what Joe West did.
Gio wears the same hat all year. Hats accrue dirt. Hats accrue substances, you know, like just stuff. We pitched in a day game. So did Gio have some sunscreen at some point in his career to make sure he doesn't get some kind of melanoma? Possibly. You know, does he use rosin to help out? Possibly. Are these things that baseball really wants to crack down on? No, it's not. I know that completely firsthand from the commissioner's office. That is not anything that's going to affect his ability to compete. A new hat didn't really seem to affect Gio's stuff too much. So that part was nice to see.
He continued on his rant.
There are people that are essentially flipping the bird at the league with how they're cheating in this game with concocted substances. There are players that are obviously doing it, going to their glove. There's clear video of it. You could tell the pitchers that are doing it because they don't want to go to their mouth. And understandably, Major League Baseball is trying their best to do it in a manner that doesn't create any black eye for the integrity of the game that we love. But how about the integrity of the guys that are pitching their tails off and doing it clean, that have an unfair competitive advantage for the guys that are clearly loading up with concoctions that they don't do anything to hide? I'm speaking up for the hitters that have a living to make facing stuff that's already really, really good. And you can see, based on spin rates, how guys' careers are jumping off the charts.
Yeah, there was a lot there from what Mike Shildt said. I've got a lot of thoughts on this and about what Major League Baseball should do next coming up, and we'll talk about that with ESPN Radio's Chris Singleton. The Yankees, it seemed like they're getting all their injured players back. Well, you know what? Their injured list just got long, and they took a couple big hits. Yankees right-hander Corey Kluber is expected to miss at least 2 months with a right shoulder injury. First baseman Luke Voit also on the injured list with a right oblique strain. Marcell Ozuna fractured his middle and ring finger, but surgery will not be required. He will miss about 5 to 6 weeks. At least that's what Ozuna put out on Instagram yesterday. He left the game versus the Red Sox Tuesday after he slid headfirst into third base and looked like he got his fingers caught up in the spikes of Red Sox third baseman Rafael Devers. Cubs second baseman Nico Hoerner was placed on the 10-day injured list with a left hamstring strain. So lots of injuries continue around Major League Baseball. There were a ton of rainouts yesterday, but let's get to the good stuff, like Tyler Glasnow dominating the Royals.
And that's going to be strike three, 98 on the corner away. And a swing and a miss. He came back with the curveball and strikes out Santana. Off here in the seventh, and a swing and a miss. Fastball away from him at 96.
So Tyler Glasnow, absolutely dominant. 8 strong innings, striking out 11. To me, he's the closest thing that baseball has to Jacob deGrom and his level of dominance. That game ended this way, top of the 10th inning.
Swing and a ground ball, base hit right field, Rays win. Rays win on a base hit to right by Manuel Margot. It took 10 innings, but the Rays have beaten the Royals 2-1.
Obviously, the bottom of the 10th inning. That sound from WDAE. Now, before we get to Chris Singleton, to Jorge Rodriguez, who is a jeweler for two of baseball's biggest stars, and Sarah Langs, I want to tell you about this. Now streaming on ESPN Plus, The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings back top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Watch the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com and listen to Fantasy Focus Baseball with Tristan and Eric for all of your fantasy needs every week, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Chris Singleton is a game analyst for ESPN Radio. And Singy, what you got going on this weekend?
Well, we got ESPN Radio Sunday night, which you will be doing on the TV side. You know, looking forward to Mets Braves, but Buster, it would be a lot more exciting if we didn't have so many guys on the IL, man. It's just unbelievable what the Mets have on the IL. And then even what the Braves have in terms of Marcell Ozuna, just a, you know, a few days ago, breaking a couple of fingers and he's going to be out. But I guess the good thing, Ronald Acuna Jr. and Jacob DeGrom, if nothing else, we have two players that we can utterly stay fixated on for the time that they're in the game.
Yeah, and it looks like that Jacob DeGrom will stay in line. We'll see. There's bad weather forecast for the days ahead, but I suspect the Mets are going to want to keep DeGrom on schedule. He pitched on Tuesday, and so his next scheduled start of regular rest would be in Sunday night's game. So we have our fingers crossed that that's what's going to happen. Speaking of Ronald Acuna Jr., we will be talking in a moment with Jorge Rodriguez, who is a jeweler for some of baseball's biggest and swaggiest young stars, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr. Singy, on a scale of 1 to 10, what was your swag game when you were a player?
Zero. I had zero swag. I was the most swag that you could possibly say I had was the days that I wore the Oakleys, which wasn't very often because I was still, you know, an old school guy groomed by guys like Willie McGee and Darren Jackson. So I was wearing the flip downs. You know, I didn't run into the situation where the glasses were on top of my hat. You know, as the sun moved out from behind the clouds, I was mostly a flip down guy. Ken Griffey Jr. was a flip down guy. That was a guy I looked up to. So that was about the most swag that I ever had. I was more of your business kind of like industrial football player in college, wear your uniform a certain way and you go out and just compete.
I would say this. I saw a moment of great swag for you. I was standing next to you in the Cleveland clubhouse when Carlos Santana was on the team and you asked him if you could put on his chain.
Yeah.
That was some serious swag.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny you pulled that out. Boog absolutely loved that and took the picture. And I would say my facial expression and wearing Carlos's chain was a fish out of water for me, honestly. Like it was the most polar opposite of my personality and what I would ever wear. But yeah, it's funny. And on top of that, what a great guy, Carlos Santana. I mean, he's one of the game's like nicest guys, in my opinion.
All right. The conversation we had with Jorge Rodriguez was so much fun. He loves what he does. And it's fun to hear the backstories on how they come up with ideas on some of the jewelry that the players wear on the field. All right. I want to do a deep dive with you on what happened with Joe West yesterday and not the day before when he broke the record for most games umpire. But yesterday I was fascinated by this when, after being prompted by Dan Bellino, who was the second base umpire, Joe West went to the mound and examined the hat of Giovanni Gallegos and basically, you know, looked at the spot that was right on the brim and took his hat out of the game. And Mike Schilt came out, the Cardinals manager. He went absolutely ballistic. He was ejected. As we heard just a few minutes ago, he was very forceful in questioning the timing of this. But I do wonder, Singy, and we've heard so much about this conversation about pitchers using foreign substances. You know, was this a case of Joe West being the cowboy, which is his nickname, where he just took it upon himself on one day to go out and actually enforce the foreign substance rule that's on the book that everyone's ignored, basically? Or is this the first shot of a larger war? And I made calls on this morning, and I got to say, I think there's a chance it's the latter, where you might have a situation where MLB is seeing offensive numbers drop to the worst levels in the modern era, and they know that pitchers are using foreign substances. You and I see it every game. Everybody on the field sees it. The umpires see it. We all see the spots on hats and pants and in gloves and on the forearm of the gloved hand. And you do wonder, after what happened with Joe West yesterday, you're going to see more umpires police that rule. What's your instinct?
Well, first, you know, the first part of your question, do I think it's Joe West, you know, kind of being Joe West? Yeah, that's what he's always done throughout his career. With that said, we've already, I mean, Mike Schilt's response to it, Josh Donaldson as well on Twitter yesterday, and says he's got a whole like video lineup of guys that cheat that he's going to release. I don't know if you saw that or not, but the exchange with Dallas Braden on Twitter, and we'll see what comes of that. But yeah, Joe West, it may have just been Joe West being Joe West in terms of, okay, I'm going to you know, pick something and sort of highlight it. He claims that, listen, I didn't want Gallegos to throw a pitch and then we have to throw him out of the ballgame. So, you know, he presented it as we were trying to prevent the Cardinals from losing a pitcher and perhaps maybe some type of suspension, who knows? But with that said, I think based upon some of the responses we are seeing, that this could create for baseball something they don't want to deal with. Like, they never want to deal with these things during the season. They always want to try to do something in the off season when, you know, the attention and focus isn't like zeroed in on the sport, and maybe they can perhaps put some, you know, type of policies in place that they hope people will follow. But I still think it comes down to like enforceability. And there's so many things, Buster, that baseball, they come up with this, you know, policy where, whether it's, hey, hitters can't step out of the box, or, hey, you know, third base coach got to be in the box, all these things that they kind of come up with. And it's great. You know, through spring training, we see it happening. We start the season and it's almost like this. It was almost like, for me as a player, spring training, you work on hit and run stuff. You work on bunting. You work on, this is the biggest thing, base running, balls in the dirt. Oh man, you guys see the guys out there. They're working on balls in the dirt, base runners, getting that secondary lead going to second. Well, the retention of that, once the season starts, it wanes over a couple of weeks. And you spent so much time in spring training. I feel like baseball, the office of the commissioner and how they go about enforcing rules is pretty much the same. They don't really commit and stick to and see things through. And to me, it's a bit embarrassing when you look at some of these things and you're saying, well, okay, you could implement something here or there, but are you going to enforce it? Are you just going to enforce it for a little while and then it's going to fade into the background like everything else? And, or you're going to pick and choose and when you're going to do it. And then when you do that, that's what starts this, like what you're talking about, sort of this war where people just start throwing grenades and saying, boom, look at this, look at this. And if you don't start looking at other like complaints or requests that people have, then it's going to become just a bigger can of worms of discrimination, if you will, whether certain clubs, certain pitchers, you could even say certain ethnicities, you know, in terms of, hey, why are they checking the Latin guys all the time? Or why, that, you know, all that stuff comes into play.
I totally agree with you. And I agree with your history of how Major League Baseball has handled these things, which is why I tweeted out this morning, I think it would be really smart for Major League Baseball today to put out a statement of support for what Joe West did yesterday, to signal to the other umpires, guys, we have your back. If you want to go check on gloves, if you want to go check on those shiny spots on forearms, which you and I see every day, yeah. You know, if you want to go check on hats, you want to check on pants, we have your back. I think that'd be smart for baseball to do that today. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, to a degree, I hate when everything has to become so regulated. But if it's going to be something that they really clamp down on, then there has to be a process when that pitcher jogs in from the bullpen.
Yep.
That he, it's like going through TSA, right?
Yep.
He gets to the mound. There's an umpire waiting there for him. Boom, hat, glove, boom, boom, boom. You move it through. Everyone gets checked.
Yep.
So that way, it's not like some people get to walk through TSA. Why doesn't that person have to take his shoes off? Why doesn't everybody know? Everyone has to do it. And if you're going to do it that way, then even though it's cumbersome, at least it becomes a standard procedure across the board all the time.
Exactly. Broad-based. I think that is absolutely important. And you can't have this. That's what bothered me about, you know, that story that came out earlier this year where it was leaked to, you know, a website that Trevor Bauer had baseballs confiscated. It's like, come on. It's because I hate the isolation of one player as opposed to a larger thing. And look, that's kind of what Mike Schilt was talking about. But I also shook my head. I felt Mike was being a little disingenuous when he was saying, you know, he wears that same hat all year. And maybe does some sunscreen get on there because he's protecting against melanoma? Oh, please. Come on.
I agree. I agree with you.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows. And to me, it's like if there's a spot that accumulates on a cap, well, guess what? Change your freaking cap.
Well, Buster, it's funny you say that because, you know, I'm a very investigative type of person. And I'm not from Missouri, but I'm like Missouri native, show me. Wait a minute. You just said something. And the same thing crossed my mind when he said, Gallegos wears the same hat all year long. First of all the things that you have to manage as a skipper, the last thing that you're going to be aware of is a guy's batting gloves, his hat, especially a bullpen guy. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's you don't know if he changes his hat every 3 days, every series, every week. You don't know that. And to me, the only way is if Schilt had some type of briefing conversation with Gallegos before he had his press conference to gather this intel to say, wears the same hat, doesn't change it. But otherwise, you're just throwing something out there that I don't believe you can substantiate. And that's one of the first things that jumped out of my mind. Like, I don't even know if the only guy that would know that, Buster, perhaps is the equipment guy. Cause he's the one that's like, you know, getting the hats. And it might not even be the equipment guy. It might be like one of the clubby kids that's like, all right, I gotta get Gio a new hat. Like he doesn't ever change his hat. But there's some things where I'm like, yeah, that's a little, you might have gone a little too much with the hyperbole and maybe need to keep it a little more centered.
It's a fighting, give me a break. Right. I mean, we all know what these guys, and I'm curious, I kind of can't wait to watch the next Cubs game that Craig Kimbrel pitches in. Yeah. I'm not saying anything out of school here, but let's face it, every time he pitches, you and I get tons of stuff on social media. Look at that cap. Like, he's had the dirtiest cap in baseball for a lot of years. And I guess that'll answer the question about whether or not this is a broad-based effort or not next time that Kimbrel pitches.
Let me ask you this as well, your thoughts. I mean, you know, melanin and skin. Okay, let's say you have a darker skinned individual who's able to blend in, you know, some type of substance. Or let's just say you have a lighter skinned individual who's able to blend in a certain type of sunscreen. Like, those are things too that again, I don't want to go down this conspiracy path of everybody's, you know, just, you know, trying to cheat. But the reality is that everyone's trying to get an edge. And when you look at baseball and perhaps, you know, what they did with the baseball this offseason, you know, I don't know. I mean, but it's always going to be a back and forth, and whether it's pitchers or hitters trying to figure out a way to get an advantage. Now, I will say this, like, I mean, I look at the game and I wonder sometimes, I know when you're removed, and especially when you've been removed as long as I have, and you're, you know, getting older and you're looking and you're admiring more what these young guys are doing because their bodies can bounce back quickly and they can compete. But I look, Buster, sometimes and I'm like, gosh, I don't even know if I could hit like in the big leagues today. When I'm watching and calling games, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's throwing 99. Oh, there goes 100. Oh, there goes nasty cut at the end. There goes, like, you're just sitting there and you're saying, oh my goodness. Like, I remember facing, who was it? Matt Anderson. Remember the tall, thin kid with the Detroit Tigers?
Yeah.
He's throwing 100. He was the only guy. Like, there was one or two guys maybe in baseball 20 years ago that were throwing 100 miles an hour. Now it's almost routine. It's somebody or two, maybe three, are coming out of the bullpen. They're throwing 100. So with that said, as a hitter speaking, as a, you know, former hitter, you've always said, whether it's an umpire giving the guy a little extra in the corners, look, he doesn't need any help. It's even more so now. They don't need any help. The only thing I would say is a safety issue is if they can't grip the ball, yes. Nobody wants to be Kevin Pillar. No one wants 100 miles an hour. That perhaps the reason being, not that he just didn't have command or control, but he didn't have a good grip on the ball. Those are situations where I'm all for get whatever you need so that you can throw the ball where you want to. But outside of that, yeah, those guys don't need any help. So I'm curious to see what happens? Where are the tapes? Donaldson, you know, where's the video? I mean, he made it pretty strong and it might be something you want to, you know, point out, but I think we should be looking for something to surface in the days to come.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to be really curious to see the follow-up to this. And again, whether or not this just becomes an isolated instance and the whole thing, the conversation drips away, as you mentioned, with all the spring training push that seems to go away. But there is a lot of feeling in the sport that we've gone from, 10 or 15 years ago when pitchers really began to use foreign substances more because they wanted to get a tacky feel in the ball so they could control it, to the point now where the feeling among a lot of players, a lot of front office people, is that the foreign substances have become weaponized. And as one general manager said to me, they're throwing 100-mile-an-hour wiffle balls with the amount of movement on the pitches. All right, Cingy, thanks for doing this. And I will talk to you this weekend when we go on those manager Zoom calls.
All right, buddy. Tell Sydney hello.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jorge Rodriguez is, and Jorge, I'm going to have you jump in here in case I get this wrong. Maybe the best way to describe you is jeweler to the stars. And in particular, because this is a baseball context, you are a jeweler to two of baseball's best and brightest stars, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. So this is cool. I'm a little insecure, though, because we were talking about last week, as we were preparing to have you on, no person has less style than me. Okay. I grew up on a dairy farm in Vermont. And for me, the style was whether or not I'd wash off my boots at the end of a day in the barn before coming in, you know, through the cellar. But besides that, I have no style. So I need you to help me with that.
Of course, anytime. If you need anything with your outfit, jewelry, or watch, or something, it'd be my pleasure.
It is a blank slate, let me tell you. How can people see your work?
I have a website. So my website's byvvsj.com. I usually go by the name VVSJ. That's my company name. And most of my work can also be viewed on Instagram. I love to post videos and clips when I finish up new pieces, new custom designs, and if I have a new client or a new player that I'm working with.
I'm always fascinated by how people got into their lines of work. How did you?
I started designing at a young age. So I started designing clothes. After I kind of evolved from clothes, I started getting into selling watches. After selling watches, I started getting into custom design for jewelry. And then that's when I started falling in love with creating jewelry and you know, memorable pieces that people, you know, are going to have forever because it's something that's custom and something that's to their liking and personalized for themselves, you know?
Absolutely. What drew you to it the most? What was the most interesting about it when you first started thinking about doing this?
Yeah, I was just trying to make a living and trying to do something different, you know, outside of what my family does. So jewelry was something that I was able to, it was like an escape for me, something new that I can, you know, would just prosper myself, my career and the things that I wanted to do in life. And jewelry was that for me. So I knew it was like a change of life for me.
How did you go through the process for the first time? Was it something where you would draw things that maybe you envisioned in your mind, or would you just, you know, capture them? And as you're doing your first pieces of jewelry, how would you do that?
Yeah, I did that by first sketching. And then people will sometimes send me their logos or send me like their number. Right now, recently, I've been doing a lot of numbers for a lot of players. So they just send me whatever they want. And then I either sketch it or make a graphic design and throw it into a 3D rendering process. After I have the render, then, you know, start the process of getting it, you know, casted, put the gold on, then put the diamonds, you know, and polish the piece. And then you have a finished product.
So tell me about the first time that a piece of your jewelry was made and how cool was that the first time got to lay eyes on it? How old were you?
I was 20 years old. Yeah, it was a letter pendant. It was a number D with wings, and it was kind of like the Bentley logo. It was a letter D and it had wings and it had diamonds. And the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, like I made this from scratch. This is amazing. Like, I put something out in the world, you know?
How did you get, what was your connection with baseball?
Well, I grew up playing baseball. I'm Dominican. Yeah, so my dream was to play, you know, Major League Baseball one day professionally, and unfortunately, I didn't get there. So I took my talents to get my business degree. I got my business degree from Adelphi University. And some of my friends did get drafted. So a couple of my friends, like Stephen Alame, is a really close friend of mine, you know, started connecting me with other players. And then from there, you know, a couple of minor leaguers started buying until I got to the major leaguers. I got Johnny Cueto. I got Gregory Polanco, Starling Marte, a bunch of guys that bought for me, thank God. So.
So when you were growing up, who was your team and who was your guy?
It's a great question. I was a Mets fan. I grew up in Queens, New York. So my favorite player was Jose Reyes.
And when's the first time you got to meet him? Have you ever gotten to meet him?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, we've done some work together. I did some diamond grills for him, some diamond teeth. So I've done something for Jose, yeah.
Nice. And when did you start to, I'm guessing as you went along and as players are wearing your pieces, you're probably getting tons of references. And that's how your work starts to spread around the game.
Yep. Yep. It has, thankfully. Yeah. The word of mouth and referrals are very, you know, key things in my business. So luckily my guys have shown me love and referred me in. And it's been a great ride so far. And it's just the beginning.
Tell me about the process that you do some of these things. Are these ideas that you bring to players, or do players come to you with concepts and then you kind of try to put their ideas on paper and then take them back to them? How do you do that?
As of right now, it's most of them reaching out to me. Sooner or later, I do have a couple designs for a couple players. I can't show these designs. These designs are going to go crazy when they come out. I can't wait. And I have a couple concepts I have for a couple of players, but it's mostly them reaching out to me right now with their ideas and their needs. And then I'm just trying to fulfill as many orders as I can, because it's adding up, you know, it's like a bunch of them at the same time coming to order, which is beautiful.
How many players wear your jewelry and, you know, professional, in a major league, minor league?
In a major league level, I would say, it's mostly Dominican guys. So I'll say about 5 to 10 guys. And then I have a bunch of minor leaguers that really wear my stuff.
And of course, you have, this spring, we did these interviews with players around baseball, and we'd ask, okay, which player has the most swag? And we'd hear all the time about Ronald Acuna Jr. and Fernando Tatis Jr. And guess what? These are two of your clients, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Tell me about what's it like to deal with Fernando Tatis Jr.
Well, Fernando's a legend, man. Fernando's great. You know, I met Fernando when he was in the minors. I met him through a mutual friend. And ever since I first met him, it's just been love and joy. And like we developed a really good friendship from the minute we first met. And just dealing with him is the best. You know, like it has been a pleasure to, you know, put the jewelry on him, you know, make him feel good with the jewelry, put a watch on him, different type of chains, you know, seeing his excitement and wearing this type of jewelry, it was just like everything for me. And the fact that he's become one of the biggest faces in baseball is huge. It's huge for me. And it's like, you know, we were there from day zero. I believed in him from before people weren't even looking his way. People were like, he would walk down the hotel room, you know, the hotel lobbies by himself, you know, and I was always gravitated towards him because I felt his energy was going to be big one day. I felt like he had big, you know, high frequency.
So I'm sure that when you're watching, like when I'm watching a game, I'm watching for arm speed, I'm watching for bat speed, that sort of thing. When you're watching him play, tell me what you're seeing in terms of his jewelry.
His jewelry is always shining. When he's wearing the tennis chain he bought for me or anything he's wearing for me, he's shining. And I see the chain, you know, doing his thing on camera. But in terms of his performances, he's just a god, you know, he's like a baseball god right now. So just the fact that he's wearing some of my pieces on the field and off the field is just like, it's a blessing beyond belief.
Give us some backstories for some of the stuff that people will see him wearing during the course of games.
In the future, he's going to be wearing, you know, diamond Cuban chains. He's going to be wearing more diamond affinity links. There's a big custom pendant I'm making for him, cartoon wise. It's going to be super detailed. The piece is going to deserve to be in the museum. Let's just say that.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be a museum like piece I'm going to create for him.
Now, because you got close to him, I'm curious. When he signed that massive contract, how long did you know before we all knew about that deal?
I mean, I would, even last year before, you know, during spring training, I would sit there with him. Like, we would just sit down and talk. And I would tell him, listen, like, I think they're going to give you $400 million. They're going to give you, like, you know, it would just, like, you know, throw numbers out there. I'm like, listen, bro, you're worth a lot of money. Like, maybe they're going to give you $500 million. And, you know, I came to the conclusion where, you know, he reached that contract. But I knew it was coming. I just didn't know exactly when. But, you know, everybody, you know, I'm sure his family, all of his close friends were waiting for that big day for him. You know, he worked super hard to get to that level, to this part of his career and his life. So, you know, it's just the beginning, and we want to make sure that he's good long term. So that's the key to life right now, you know, longevity.
I've heard he has a wide range of interests. I mean, you know him better than I do. That I've had coaches in the Padres tell me that I would be surprised at his range of interests.
Yeah, we're like two adventurous kids pretty much in this big awesome world. So, you know, there's no limits of what we can do in this world. So I know that he wants to try out a different, you know, different things. He loves to do it. He has a ton of different hobbies. So we'll see where life goes, you know.
All right. Ronald Acuña Jr. It's interesting. But of course, we see that great outward confidence that he had, that great competitive arrogance that he plays with. And I hear from the Braves people that before games, he's actually really quiet. Like, he's sitting in his locker beforehand. He's almost like an actor before going out on a stage, and suddenly he just sort of explodes when he's actually out on a baseball field. Tell me about his personality.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I experience Ronald Acuña, he's been very quiet, and he's a very timid personality. But when he comes on the field, it's like it's a whole different person that's on the field. And it's like, it feels like that's like him at his true self, you know. He's at his true self when he's on the baseball field. So it kind of shows, and it's amazing to see a different side of a person just be on the field, you know.
Give me some backstory on some of the jewelry that he wears.
Yeah, he ordered a number 13 pendant through his uncle Calvin Escobar. So I made two pendants. It was a number 49 and a number 14 and a number 13 for Ronald. And that was pretty much it. Man, he was wearing that pendant throughout all last year.
How long from the moment you begin to conceptualize something to the time when a player can put it around his neck? How long does that take?
It usually takes about two to three weeks, depending if I have the item in stock or if I have to custom create the item.
All right. So I'm guessing as time is going on, it almost like becomes a snowball for you where you're hearing from more and more and more people.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an amazing snowball effect right now.
What's it like for you to watch a game, you know, as opposed to when you were a kid and you're watching the Mets? Now you watch a game and you see a player wearing your jewelry. What's that like?
Oh, man, it's like it's the best feeling ever. It's like I made it in a certain way. You know, I always wanted to play Major League Baseball. I want to play professionally. Like now I'm, you know, my main clients, professional baseball players. It's like I'm living my dream in a certain way, you know, not completely how I envisioned it, but in a way where I'm happy with it, and it makes me happy and I feel fulfilled. So I love going to games and seeing my work now, and obviously hitting up the guys, seeing them, catching up with them, joking around. And yeah, life is good. Can't complain.
Who is the coolest person you've gotten to meet?
Tatis. My brother Fernando is just he's one of the best people I've met in my life, and he's been there for me in ways that, you know, a lot of people haven't. He's an awesome human being, and I'm just blessed to, you know, be in his life, and let's see where the future goes. And I know there's only for good things down the line.
All right, this is awesome. And it's so great talking with you. I love the joy you have in what you do. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Buster. Appreciate you.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I was just talking to Chris Singleton about, you know, what happened with Joe West yesterday, confiscating the hat, and I still don't know to this moment whether or not it was actually confiscated or just taken out of the game. But it leads to the larger question that I posed to Chris. Does this feel like it's the first shot fired in a larger war where baseball is going to enforce the foreign substance rule that actually is on the books? Or was this a case of Joe West being Joe West, being a cowboy and stepping out in front, and then we don't really see more things like this going forward. What's your instinct?
It's a great question. You know, I think that if we hadn't known over the last few weeks, and I guess in the off season, sort of leading into this year, that foreign substances were on the mind to be, you know, kept track of or whatever else this year, my instinct would be to say that this is Joe West being Joe West. We know how he can be, as you said, cowboy and all of that. But I do think that given the background of the discussions that we've seen about foreign substances already this season, I do think that it seems like it could be the first of future, you know, moves like this. Again, whether or not that was confiscated or just taken out of the game, whatever happened, that we may see other instances of umpires, you know, going to pitchers and pointing things out in this way. I mean, it's impossible to know, but it does seem that it may have been almost coincidence that it happened to be Joe West doing this first.
I mentioned to Chris that I really think it'd be smart for, and I tweeted this out this morning, it'd be smart for Major League Baseball to offer a statement of support of Joe West and say, look, you know, Joe West is enforcing the rules on the books as a, and that in that way, having a signal to all about all the other umpires saying, if you want to enforce this rule, if you see a spot on a cap, if you see a spot on the forearm or shiny spot on the forearm of the gloved hand, if you see something in the glove, we got your back. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that sort of clarifying where this was coming from, whether it was coming from that movement to, you know, really crack down on that or not, makes a ton of sense for sure. And that would really inform whether we are going to see this moving forward from other umpires beyond just Cowboy Joe West.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 255. So speaking of that White Sox game, and he didn't play yesterday, but I have my eye on Yasmani Grandal, who I think is having one of the weirdest seasons we've ever seen in terms of batting line. So he's hitting 136. He's has a 391 on base percentage. So 255 is the difference between those two. So the largest difference in on base percentage and batting average in a single season for a completed season for any qualified hitter is 247 points by Barry Bonds in 2004 when he hit 362 and had a 609 on base percentage. That's the year that he set the intentional walk record with 120. And there's only a handful of other instances of a guy having a 200 plus point differential, Bonds in 2002, and then a guy named Yank Robinson in 1890. Those are our only other instances, and both of those were not guys hitting 136. So obviously this is not ideal. There is certainly a problem in the hitting department, but he doesn't swing and he's getting on base and he's walking at a rate that we've only ever seen from Barry Bonds. I don't really think this can continue because it just doesn't make any sense. And he's been playing a bit less lately, and I'm sure that's related to the low batting average, but it's just pretty crazy. We could have Yasmani Grandal and Barry Bonds in very different ways on the same list.
Number two.
Number two is 16. So Vlad Jr. is tied for the major league lead in home runs with Adolis Garcia. He has 16 home runs. He also led entering the day yesterday. They got rained out. And he was also tied for the lead with Ronald Acuna Jr. 2 days ago. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s Hall of Famer father, who, you know, hit 449 home runs in his career. We know he was not the homer hitting prowess guy of his time, but he hit a lot of home runs. He had just one day in his entire career where he had at least a share of the major league leading home runs, at least five home runs into a season. It was through the games of April 21st, 2000. He was tied with three others. He was tied with Tony Bautista, Mike Sweeney, and Jason Giambi. They all had seven home runs. So Vlad Jr. has already led the majors in home runs for two more days than his Hall of Fame father, which is just mind-blowing to me.
Number one.
Number one is four. So New York is, I mean, always the capital of the baseball world for me. But certainly today, I think everyone could say that it's the capital of the baseball world because there are four baseball games in New York City today. And I know that there are seven innings each, but there are four games. So this is going to be just the fifth time in the expansion era, that's since 1961, that there are four games in the same city on the same day. So the Mets and Yankees have both played home doubleheaders three times before, September 13th, 2008, April 13th, 1997, and September 21st, 1982. And then the Cubs and White Sox did this in 1961. On June 21st. And some pretty crazy games too. I mean, one of those Mets games featured a Ron Gardenhire walk-off home run. He hit four career home runs. And the I think it's the White, one of the White Sox games in 1961 featured Don Larsen throwing seven innings in relief and getting an RBI. So we're probably in for some craziness today, but it's just pretty cool to see four games in the same city on the same day.
Speaking of the Yankees, devastating news yesterday. Not only did they lose Luke Voit, which was a surprise, another injury. He's out with an oblique. They didn't. It's a grade two, and they didn't give a timeline, but I'm guessing it's anywhere from 6 weeks to 8 weeks. But they also get news that Corey Kluber has a shoulder strain, and they said Aaron Boone told reporters he's out at least 2 months. And, of course, it's the end of May. The trade deadline is July 31st. I got to believe in the Yankees front office, the internal feeling might be, you know what? We now have one of our needs defined leading up to the trade deadline. We need to go and get a starting pitcher. Luis Severino's coming back from the surgery he had last year. But you know, and I know, you never know with those guys coming back. I mean, we've seen it with Noah Syndergaard, where you can have setbacks. And with Corey Kluber, we saw the great things that he's possible of with a no-hitter. But we also were reminded he's an older pitcher with a million miles on his arm, and God knows what they could get out of him even if he comes back. So if you're Brian Cashman, are you today talking with the folks in your front office about let's start examining available starting pitchers?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's time to start thinking about Max Scherzer, right? I mean, that's the first name that comes to mind. We've seen his name already coming up in trade rumors with where the Nationals are at and the fact that he's in the last year of his deal. There are other options as well, but that's just the first that comes to mind for me. But this is what we knew could happen with their rotation, right? And we've talked about it. It was high risk, high reward. They got some of that high reward. And Jameson Taillon has looked better lately. He certainly looked better when they had that scoreless streak from their starters. But overall, this was, I mean, it's very, you know, sad to see Kluber suffer an injury like that, especially with the injuries that he's had lately. But it's not necessarily surprising, again, just not knowing what his arm was going to be able to handle this year after basically not pitching for 2 years. So, you know, as we've talked about a handful of times, if the Yankees need to make a move, we know that they will do that. So it does feel like there's going to be some new starting pitcher there at some point in the next 2 months.
I thought when you were talking about hitters with a 200-point difference between batting average and on base percentage, that a name that might pop up was Gene Tennis, the longtime catcher for the Oakland Athletics, San Diego Padres. Sarah, he was my secret weapon when I was playing Strat-O-Matic baseball. I would draft him and then use him as a pinch hitter, and he would draw crazy walks. I looked this up, 1977, 125 walks, hit .233. But at a .415 on base percentage, also led the league in hit batsmen. So number of times hit by pitch. So that he would have been, but he fell just short of your standard. All right. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. And actually, Buster, I'd like to make a confession before we read the tweets, if that's okay. I get steamed up for Tyler Glasnow for several reasons. First of all, good friend of the pod, obviously. He throws gas. He is handsome as hell. He looks like a young Killian Murphy. He's got the swagger of Tommy Shelby. And that hair, man, what can you say about that beautiful mane? And this was a fun stat I saw as I was going through the stats and information group over here at ESPN, their wrap-up of the game last night. Last night, six of Glasnow's 11 strikeouts have been with his curveball, giving him more than 47 with the hook this season. He's the only pitcher with more than 40 or more strikeouts with his curveball. That is pretty cool. So I get sized for Tyler Glasnow.
Nice. Well, when you say you get steamed up, I was like, how did we offend Tyler? I'm trying to remember what I said that made me offended. Like, you were like coming at me going, hey, how come we don't give him credit? Mm. How come we don't do this? I got to agree with you. And I told this story before and I'll tell it again. Tyler is such a fun personality. And we did a series of interviews, as we do every spring, with the Pittsburgh Pirates when he was there. And one of the standard questions to all players was, do you have any tattoos? And he got this absolutely impish grin on his face. He goes, I got two. And you're looking at him and you're like, I don't see any tattoos. And then he explains he had one on the inside of his lower lip and he had one at the bottom of his foot. And there was great backstories on both. He really is a great guy. And so he's like, what people ask me all the time, who do you root for? And I tell them, you know, I root for people. And, you know, you hope good things happen for good people. Tyler Glasnow, really good dude.
Love that guy. So handsome. Let's get to the tweets. Lewis Adio Weiss writes in @Adio_Lewis00 with Bellinger appearing to be near a return. What will the Dodgers do to keep Chris Taylor's bat in the lineup? He has a 375 on base percentage in games appearing as a center fielder this season.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, how the Dodgers have run their lineup really since Andrew Friedman took over baseball ops there, they just go with matchups on a given day. I would say, as they have roster decision to make, that Albert Pujols probably is vulnerable. You know, people at the time he signed, they were saying, well, you know, he'll be with him the rest of the year. I don't think that's a given. I think he's got to perform. And if you're the Dodgers and you have Max Muncy and you have Chris Taylor and you have Cody Bellinger in the outfield, there are going to be games when Albert Pujols is probably going to be bumped to the side.
For sure. Next up, we have Nick Murray at Nick Murray writing 91. He writes in, he preceded this question with a lot of background, but I thought we should just get down to business here. He writes, are knuckleballs officially a thing of the past? Will we ever see a Tim Wakefield or an R.A. Dickey in today's game?
No, I think that occasionally you get someone who, let's face it, it comes out of desperation. You know, you don't have 15-year-olds who are like, you know what, I want to be a knuckleball pitcher. And I'm going to perfect my craft. The history of almost every knuckleballer is that they get bombed in the minor leagues. They want to continue playing professional baseball, and maybe they tinkered with the pitch a little bit and they like the movement, and then they start to refine it. And then lo and behold, you know, they develop and they're an outlier and they have some success. So I don't think it's officially a thing of the past. I think it goes in cycles. They're always usually one or two in professional baseball at all times. I love the tradition too, that, you know, they all now have taken to wearing number 49 whenever one of them comes up.
Oh, that is cool. Last one for today, PK Steinberg. He writes in, nearly 2 months into the season, what's your grade for Blake Snell? PK's feeling generous. He gives him a C-. I would have to agree there. What do you think, Buster?
You know, I when I saw your thing, I was like, generous C-. And then you look at the numbers, 10 starts, 44 innings, 28 walks in 44 innings, 67 strikeouts, a 4.50 ERA. PK, I think you're right. I think you are being generous. If you gave him a D plus, you know, 10 starts, 44 innings, I, you know, I'd love to talk to Blake about this and ask him what he thinks, but I suspect he probably would feel the same way, especially in a year. And I didn't update these numbers this morning when they're like 30 pitchers, Taylor, who have ERAs below three. Like they're right. Like 12 to 15 pitchers with ERAs below two. And so you have all these pitchers putting up incredible numbers and Blake Snell is struggling.
Hopefully he works it out. That'll do it for Bleacher Tweets for today. #BleacherTweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Something else to remember too, when we talk about Blake Snell, you know, going from the Rays and Tyler Glasnow going to the Rays, Tampa Bay does not make bad trades.
Nope.
If I were on the other end of that, and I got a call from Eric Neanders, the general manager of the Rays, and he said, you know, we're thinking about acquiring your relief pitcher in Double A. I'd be like, okay, what are we missing? That's how good the Rays are and what they do. That's it for today. My thanks to Chris, to Jorge. It was so much fun. Sarah and Taylor, have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.